This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Joyce Goh, and you're listening to Pressing Matters, the show that goes behind the headlines where we speak to members of the press on their stories. Joining me today on the show is Kamarul Azhar, Assistant Editor at The Edge. Kamarul, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Joyce.
Well, there was news flow just before the weekend that the Supreme Courts in India had ordered the purchase of Fortis by IHH Healthcare to be put on hold. And your latest story out in The Edge Weekly this week is on this. Tell us, what got you on this story, and was the halt by the courts expected, or was it a surprise?
The story actually was it was first published in India. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the Supreme Court over there has already come up with a verdict, so to say, to halt the selling of the stake of Fortis to IHH, because Daiichi Sankyo, a pharmaceutical company based in Japan, has actually plead their case to the Delhi High Court to stop the former promoters, the Singh brothers, from selling their shares. Mm. Because there is a court case between them, mm-hmm, previously that involves the Singh brothers pledging their shares to having to... They have to pay Daiichi Sankyo based on the number of their shares.
Okay.
So now that the number of their shares have dwindled because the other creditors have already claimed those shares, and now that they are trying to sell Fortis to IHH, so Daiichi Sankyo said, no, the number of shares have already dwindled, so you can't do this.
Mm.
So the Delhi High Court actually agree with them and then...
It's been put on hold.
Yeah.
So when you say the Singh brothers, the shares that they pledged, these are Fortis shares, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it was a lengthy process for, mm-hmm, IHH to acquire Fortis, and the acquisition would give IHH Healthcare a foothold in India.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the second largest country in the world by, mm-hmm, population, right?
Yeah.
So in July, when IHH Healthcare was announced the winner of the bid to acquire Fortis, Daiichi Sankyo approached the Delhi High Court,
mm-hmm,
and to block the sale. And with this latest news that the courts in India is putting this whole acquisition on hold,
yep,
how would this impact IHH? What are analysts telling you?
Well, IHH not being... so IHH is still one of the largest healthcare company in,
mm-hmm,
the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, they are in a lot of markets. But India is one of the growing market out there, especially in healthcare. So by getting in India, it will be a big boost for IHH. But
definitely,
at the same time, this acquisition has been going on for quite some time.
Mm.
And throughout the acquisition process, there have actually been some bidding wars with other, equally deep-pocketed investors.
Mm-hmm.
So, some analysts are questioning whether it is a wise buy for IHH, given that, you have been increasing the offers just because you want to get into India, just to get this Fortis. Of course, Fortis is a big company and it gives a very good market presence for IHH in India. But at the same time, due to the, you keep on increasing the offers, and now that this is happening, so, and then at the same time, with the local political climate in Malaysia, whereby the government is trying to, get Khazanah to sell off some of their assets. So, where does this
Fit in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Well, the fairly recent acquisition of a 16% equity interest in IHH by Mitsui & Co. from Khazanah will make it has made the Japanese company the largest shareholder in IHH, right? Because right now they, mm-hmm, have nearly 33%.
Mm-hmm.
So with Mitsui replacing Khazanah as IHH's largest shareholder, is the acquisition of Fortis still a priority?
Yeah, that remains to be seen, because even the acquisition of the stake by Mitsui from Khazanah, as at last Friday, IHH hasn't announced that the acquisition has gone through, but the conditions precedent to it has been completed, which is the acquisition of 30% stake in Acibadem, healthcare provider in Turkey. So that condition precedent has been completed, has been fulfilled. So it is safe to assume that Mitsui has now become the largest shareholder in IHH. But at the same time, we are not sure whether, what is the direction moving forward? Is Mitsui going to be the driving factor behind IHH, or is it still going to be Khazanah?
What are analysts saying? And, you know, how long will this take, do they think, or how long should they give it before they, okay, bye, you know, walk away?
People haven't talked about that yet, but then people are questioning whether it is a wise move by IHH.
Since
the Supreme Court has already halted the sale, in the legal side of it, what would IHH do? Will IHH appeal to the? Can IHH appeal? Is IHH part of the parties of the case? I'm not entirely sure about that.
That is true. Mm-hmm. Well, also, Kamarul, this week you've been quite busy writing a lot of stories. This week, you wrote in The Edge about a merger between Astro and Maxis that's still being talked about. Does a merger between Astro and Maxis make good business sense? I mean, what are analysts saying?
Some analysts are saying that it could create a new entity, which is, you know, which has a balanced portfolio between data consumption and content consumption. And content consumption is, anyway, moving towards data, towards on the data side, rather than, you know, cable or satellite. So, you see this by, you know, through Netflix, iFlix and the likes. And people are consuming content on the go. So they need, those are usually on data, right? So, it would give Astro a lifeline.
A lifeline.
Yeah. And Maxis, it would give Maxis, a new business model, because the telco industry as well is currently facing some challenges.
I noticed that a number of research houses have started upgrading Astro. I think some of them saying that there's this attractive risk-reward potential for investors to ride on this privatization or M&A angle. Mm-hmm. What your sources are telling you when I read the story is that they're saying this could happen next year. Do you think that is how close though? First half next year, second half next year? What are they telling you?
Yeah, the story about the privatization of Astro has been going on for quite some time. There were talks of the largest shareholder, Tiananda Krishnan, trying to privatize or even sell Astro.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then that didn't happen. So now the talks is that a merger between Astro and Maxis. And for some analysts, it makes good business sense, because, you know, to buy Astro is not a small amount involved. So how many people out there can buy Astro? So by merging Astro and Maxis, it makes wise business sense for Ananda and also the entire group.
Yeah, so let's look at, from the point of view of also, I think some people are saying on the ground is that Maxis's interim CEO, that's Robert Nason, is still an interim CEO, I think, right? Whether or not he is actual CEO yet, you know. So what some analysts are saying is whether or not this hints of a bigger plan. I think also in Astro, the acting CEO, Henry Tan, will only take the actual role in January next month, right? So what's interesting is if the merger happens, should it happen, I mean, how big an entity would that be? I mean, there are synergies, but that will also, that might come with job losses as well, right? Because cost rationalization,
I suppose,
and all that.
Yeah.
Well, also, you quoted saying that a source who has direct knowledge of the exercise says that they're going to work towards realizing the merger at the shareholder level. That has started already. Do you think, like, how much work has been done to this? Or are they just looking first and then actually go into the deep dive into the actual works later on?
Based on my source, who, who knows about this work to merge Astro and Maxis at the shareholder level, I think it's quite advanced already.
Ah.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, whether they have already, you know, worked out a valuation or whether they have appointed investment banks to this, that remains unclear.
Yeah, the actual mechanics of it, right? Because Astro also just announced recently that they're going to undergo some job cuts. So they are undergoing some, they are undergoing a strategic review of their business structure, deeper cost rationalization. Also, I think net profit dropped recently, year on year, I think 29%. And looking at the 9 months ended October 31st, Astro's pay TV average revenue per user declined 0.8% year on year to 99.90 ringgit. So 99 ringgit 90 cent from 100 ringgit 70 cent. So below the 100 ringgit mark. What are analysts saying when it comes to the future of Astro? Are they concerned or are they saying what they're doing right now is the way forward, looking at, you know, reviewing their business structure?
The challenges with Astro is that, well, because if you look at the numbers, penetration has been high. Penetration of households has been high. But this could come from Enjoy, which is a free service.
Okay.
So that's why their ARPU actually dropped in the latest quarter. And this trend is expected to go on. You know, people are just taking the basic package, which is Enjoy, and, you know, and whatever additional to that, they would rather subscribe to the data packages of Netflix or iFlix rather than Astro. And some of Astro's live programs are already being made available on YouTube.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, all these things come together. It seems like, you know, Astro itself knows about this change of trend, and, you know, they are preparing themselves towards that, which is a good thing, you know, by the bullet.
They're not in denial.
Yeah, they're not in denial.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, interesting observation there. Well, I'm speaking to Kamarul Azhar, assistant editor at The Edge on Pressing Matters. When we come back, we'll discuss more stories coming out of Corporate Malaysia. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters, the show that goes behind the headlines where we speak to members of the press on their stories. Today, we're speaking to Kamarul Azhar, assistant editor at The Edge. Kamarul, earlier we were talking about your stories on a potential Astro Maxis merger as well as uncertainty ahead over IHH's Fortis investment. Now, you also wrote a story earlier this month on talk of reviving the stalled Putrajaya monorail project that had re-emerged. Your sources familiar with the matter said Putrajaya Corp, the project owner, and the Ministry of Transport will be issuing a request for proposal in January next year. That's next month. And after which prospective contractors can submit their proposals. Share with us what you're hearing on the ground on this.
Well, one of the... I think you know, if I mention this, I think everyone would know where does this come from. One of the contractor for public transportation engineering and construction company here, they are saying that, you know, the government has been wanting to revive Putrajaya monorail, and this is because you know, the MRT line 2, which will connect KL and Putrajaya, the construction is quite ongoing, and Putrajaya monorail, with the construction of Putrajaya monorail, you know, the entire city of Putrajaya and the, you know, residents there would be able to be connected to the rest of Klang Valley. So, you know, to the government, this is a good investment. And then same, I mean, you know, the basic infrastructure has already been constructed several, you know,
it's
about
there.
A decade ago. Yeah, so it's just about, you know, reviving that project.
Yeah, well, the project was postponed in 2004 after millions of ringgit worth of civil works had been completed. Can it still be saved, though, or must, you know, the project start from scratch again? And if they do start from scratch, or when the project restarts, how much would that cost? I mean, what are engineers telling you? Because you went on the ground to speak to engineers as
well. The engineers are saying that, you know, it's actually quite doable because civil structure actually built to withstand at least 100 years, you know, even though it has gone down to disrepair. It's just a matter of rehabilitating this infrastructure, this pylons and all. So it doesn't take a lot of civil engineering or construction to revive this project. And so, you know, you have already have this...
The structure is
basic
there.
Basic infrastructure. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's just about building on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the costs, they pack the cost around 1 billion to 1.2 billion. And that doesn't involve land acquisition. But at the same time, you know, land in Putrajaya is mostly owned by the government. So not many private owners are there, especially the lines of the Putrajaya monorail.
Mm.
Because it has been earmarked as the land to be developed for the Putrajaya monorail project.
Well, can the government afford this though? Because, you know, given the 1 trillion ringgit debt that, mm-hmm. you know, Mountain, that we're sitting on, and, you know, and you're saying engineering consultants estimate this cost to be between about over 1 billion ringgit, mm-hmm. and, you know, to complete this monorail, and that excludes land acquisition costs. Can the government afford this?
So one of the models that they are looking at, the consultants and even the government is looking at, is a private financing initiative. So 1 billion to 1.2 billion ringgit kind of project is not that much for the private sector to finance. The government might not have to put in a lot of money. And, you know, I mean, the likes of the big guys, you know, MMC, Gamuda, you know, even other private sector companies, they would be able to come up with 1 billion to 1.2 billion ringgit.
But what would the returns be like though? Because of course you can invest money, but of course, like we know, the private sector will want to know what will the returns be like. Will it be good returns? Will it promise, such a project, will they get good returns from this?
The entire model of Putrajaya monorail depends on the traffic from KL and the rest of Klang Valley as well. So, you know, just imagine if we don't have to drive into Putrajaya anymore, you know, with the SSP line is completed, and then, you know, you can transfer onto Putrajaya monorail because they're going to have an interchange station between the lines.
Where is that? Where is the interchange?
It's in the Putrajaya Central.
Okay, okay.
The station for monorail at Putrajaya Central is already completed.
Mm.
Yeah, so... you know, it's going to be a seamless interchange between the between three lines, actually, the ERL to KL, KLIA and KL Central, and then the SSP line, as well as Putrajaya monorail.
Interesting. And it is about convenience. I mean, if you make it convenient, then people will take it. Mm-hmm. Are you hearing that? Because I think they've done the feasibility study already, right? So now you're saying that the RFP, that's the request for proposal, that's going to be issued next month. Are you hearing on the ground whether or not there's already interest?
Yeah, there has been interest, especially from the normal guys, lah.
I mean, you know, usual suspects.
The usual suspects.
Okay, so
yeah. I mean, because of the financial situation of the country, the government has downsized a lot of public infrastructure. So construction guys are scraping the barrel for, you know,
any
potential
project.
Yeah. So 1 billion project is not big. I mean, since we have been accustomed to 50 billion ringgit of projects, the first monorail line. But, you know, in this kind of situation, 1 billion project is valuable for everyone.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Well, good stuff. Keep them coming, your articles. Well, that's all the time we have here on Pressing Matters today. I've been speaking to Kamarul Asa, Assistant Editor at The Edge on Pressing Matters. Coming up is the 10 a.m. News Bulletin, followed by Enterprise. I'm Joyce Goh, signing off for The Morning Run this morning. BFM, stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.